What I want today. Today, I want something impossible. I don't just want back in with the one Christian group. I want to break bread or take communion with the local Christians in general. The ones who kicked me out. The ones who kicked them out. The ones who left and formed a different group because they disapproved of all of the kicking out. The ones who left and formed a group that would be more free. The ones who left and formed a group that would take the Bible more seriously and judge evil more faithfully. I want to break bread again with my mom and dad, with my uncles, with people with whom I grew up, with new brethren friends, with random Christian people I make a connection to locally and on the internet, with all of them, despite the fact that they prefer to be shattered the way they are. They will not meet with each other as they worship separately on purpose. I don't want to help divide the body, but each one wants me to take a side. Which church do you go to? Am I of Paul, or am I of Apollos? Worse yet, do I want to arrogantly claim to be part of the only group really truly taking Christ's side in the dividing? I feel like I am not forgiven for this refusal to declare an allegiance, but I refuse to declare one, and I remain a free-range Christian to this day. I do not join churches. I do not let any single one of them monopolize my schedule. I do not sign agreements to keep church rules, and I will continue to take communion with any people I recognize as sincere Christians. I attend a church only occasionally, though I spend as much time as I can with Christians outside of that context. This latter thing is hard to swing with a lot of locals because I know many, many Christians who only hang out with Christians for 10 minutes after church at their church, and that's their fill of Christians for the week. I want to actually come together with other Christians and connect in love and affection and brotherhood rather than duty. I don't want it to be a sacrifice for God. But how do you get around Hebrews 10:25, I am asked over and over again? How do you deal with the clear instruction in Scripture not to forsake the coming together with other Christians? I come together with Christians all the time, I reply annoyingly. I spend an awful lot of money on gas, phone bills, internet, and plane tickets, I continue. I spend an awful lot in pubs and diners and coffee shops where I've met them to have a genuine talk away from the big church show. And I get no response. Because that doesn't count. I'm not reporting to a church on Sunday morning most often. And we pay for heaven in church attendance, apparently. It is, Dallas Willard says, a sin management system. It's how we declare allegiance on the most basic level. It's how we indicate who we think is right. Anything we do outside of a scheduled, posted, official church event is secular, while anything posted on a church schedule is sacred. I don't see it like that. I know a lot of Christians don't, not really. Yet many say I'm in clear disobedience to the Scripture by not declaring an allegiance, for always looking to come together with Christians a few at a time, outside of church activities, but not forming a new Christian group. I do it anyway. In inexplicable disobedience to solemn Scriptures, apparently. Scriptures like Hebrews 10:25. I am forsaking coming together with other Christians, I'm told. Thing is, right from the start, whenever I wanted to talk about and work on all this problematic stuff, especially with other people who'd been through similar experiences, hurried, desperate feet have always rushed in to shut down all such talk. After all, it was tearing down the Lord's people to talk about things like this. Also, people like me looking for what I'm looking for get
so sad that some of you are such bitter haters. What difficult lives you're choosing to live. Why can't you just get over yourselves and just love Jesus with the rest of us? We rejoice in him 24/7.
Move on. Find a church and be a good Christian. Help there if you can. What good are you doing with all of this?
You must have done something. They kicked you out, didn't they? Why can't you just give them what they want from you and set things right? Why are you being so stubborn and holding on to the past?
Well, I'm very glad indeed that you don't go to our church. We're very happy where I go, and we plan to keep it that way.
None of that seems terribly helpful to any of us, the majority of Christians. It is the best-kept secret in Christendom that it is the minority and not the majority of Christians who regularly attend, are heavily involved in, and benefit from the formalized, accredited, tax-exempt Western concept of church. It's like in a high school. There are a few students who are involved in or who enjoy the efforts of Students Council and their themed days and pep rallies and so on, but only a few. Maybe 5%, to judge by how many people wear blue on Wear Blue Day. And the thing is, the more students who opt out of this stuff and find it meaningless, boring, or annoying, the more defiantly and triumphantly will exude the perky few who are into it. It's all the cooler to be the only ones with any school spirit. So sad that no one else has any but them. Thing is, half of human beings are introverts. Students' council and churches seem to only have stuff for extroverts, for group people. In fact, they seem challenged by individualism, intellectualism, and those who like quiet and solitude or talking to people one at a time and not being required to present what was said or done to anyone. People who do not see the benefits of being supervised or facilitated or even scheduled. As I see the efforts of students' council at schools where I work, it makes me think of church. Perky people being perky, driving away the less perky with their pointy, shrill, grating enthusiasm, like nails on a chalkboard to many of us, thoughtlessly into getting large groups of people to exhibit some kind of nebulous, uniform, synchronized togetherness, because they think that's what heaven's like High School Musical and Glee rolled into one. But people keep asking us, why do you have to dwell on the past? Why do you have to take your own allegedly negative experiences and keep going on about them? Why do you think it's all right to feel so sorry for yourself? Church is hell for us too, but what you do is you man up and you show up with a smile and you sing. Anne was out once she admitted she was having physical relations with her boyfriend, and she didn't want back in. She writes,
I have spent so little time thinking about this. Getting put in discipline did wound me, though. There are things that happen that trigger the memory of being labeled as bad and put away, and it is extremely painful to contemplate. At the time, I was kind of tough, like I didn't care that they put me out. It's stupid, but it did hurt. Other things have happened since where I was misunderstood or offended people, and then they turned against me, and it felt the same as it did when I was put out. I don't speak up to defend myself. I feel like I deserve it. I remember getting grilled by three brothers in a small Sunday school classroom, and they were asking me how many times I had sex with my boyfriend, and I just thought it was ridiculous and bizarre that they needed to know that. I felt embarrassed for them, and I think they were embarrassed too.
She has dealt with leaving behind her missionary's kid background by avoiding Christians altogether. She says,
I purposefully avoid Christians most of the time. I recall with amusement an incident where my husband and I were shopping at a garage sale, and some young women in skirts came down the street and approached us with pamphlets. I responded, probably with a little too much enthusiasm, no thanks, I just escaped from a religion. Part of me hoped I'd planted a seed, but probably they just prayed for me a lot. Sad to say, I didn't think of praying for them.
Where's the good in discussing it? So again, why address the unpopular topic of legalism and try to trace what a path out of it might look like? Why bother to learn anything from and about it at all? Why not just stop thinking about it altogether? One thing that is important to know is that I, comparatively speaking, have it pretty good as far as negative brethren experiences go. I've spoken to people with genuinely bad brethren experiences. This gives me some idea about people who desperately need out of their toxic situations far more than I ever did. Many of them have, often due to upbringing, even less clue than I did about how to get free and find Christ, or even the bus station. Bad experiences of church are not rare, isolated cases. As I said, in my group, we kicked out and drove away more people than we kept. Many, many churches planted in optimism end up crash landing fairly heavily, and kids involved in them have their worlds shattered by the experience sometimes, especially if their parents and family were very involved. And many of those disappointed, kicked out, and driven away people can't just smile and sing in another church's choir the following week. They have been messed over but good. A disturbingly high number have had to deal with rape and molestation they were forbidden to talk about, often by men in power. if you head even slightly right of my own brethren group, you have it a whole lot worse than I ever did if you leave, thereby demonstrating your disloyalty. In any number of stricter brethren groups, you don't have to simply sit in the back and not take communion if you come out on Sunday morning, if you get into trouble. You do not come out Sunday morning because you can't come onto the property anymore. There are a number of brethren groups which practice extreme isolationism, called separation, which involves cutting that person off from even casual daily interaction, even with family. There are brethren groups which encourage wives to divorce kicked out husbands for the sake of the children. And there are people who not only get kicked out and get divorced by their spouses, but have to fight to see their own children who are taught to dread seeing them. Because legalism is all about control and does not shrink from splitting up what God has joined together. It is very vengeful. Every day, my Facebook feed fills up with people from Canada, the UK, Australia, New Zealand, and America who saw their own wife, mother, father, brother, cousin, or daughter quite by accident in the grocery store from behind and snapped an awkward, blurry iPhone pic before the person could bolt with an angry face. Because it's been 7 or 10 or 20 years since they saw these relatives due to church culture, so they're reduced to things like stalking their own mothers. Said relatives are only to speak to them to try to encourage them to return. Once it is clear the wandering sheep isn't going back, there's no more interaction. It is withheld punitively. So these folks end up desperate for normal connections to their blood relatives. People from these stricter brethren groups talk about their relatives dying and never being told about it, though they live in the same town. There are stories on the news about brethren people then being interfered with when they try to attend their own relatives' funerals. False funeral times and locations are given. Physical violence has ensued. Because there are two kinds of interactions with still-in relatives in groups like this. On the one hand, sickly, sweetly worded messages about how incredibly sad everyone is that you have just wandered away and drifted off from the right path and how everyone is just really praying you will just come back. And on the other, robotic, cold dismissal, blankly pretending you aren't alive. A worldly nurse who phoned an inn exclusive to tell him that his out father had died was told only, "You did your duty, goodbye." Click. Her duty was informing a son who did not show a sign of caring about his own father's death. Doesn't sound like having natural affection to me at all. I'm sure he was trying to be a good example to that unsaved nurse of what having Christ in her life could do. Those large bunker-like meeting halls have locks and gates and no windows. They have bouncers. They are like Mormon, Jehovah's Witness, and Scientology churches. They are like the Masons. The lack of windows and the separate plumbing hookups so as to not mix with unbelievers are absurdly mandatory. And all too often, these groups churn out brainwashed sheep who, unlike me, are given really very little knowledge of the Bible growing up. Just the rules and what the man of God on earth, their Paul, says. Some brethren groups, unlike mine, which was a culture characterized by abstinence from alcohol, are plagued by not very secret alcoholism running rampant throughout the leadership and the congregants. Needless to say, this doesn't help anything. Many of these groups forbid anyone from getting any education beyond what the government of their country requires on pain of excommunication. Women, certainly. So university or college are forbidden to them, unlike me who had my arts degree partly funded by my parents and free suppers at the Dodds's on meeting nights if I was going to attend school. Really right-wing brethren groups excommunicate women who admit to using birth control as they view it as a form of preemptive abortion. Birth control? Never! We use his control. Some of these brethren groups, unlike mine, are without question full-on cults. They have a single man who is the infallible, unquestionable, worldwide leader with access to everyone's money. When you leave, you lose your job, your home, your family, and your car. Everything. Bruce Hales gets it. And outside Brethren groups, there are numerous evangelical churches with Christian universities and schools which require students to sign contracts agreeing to abstain from all alcohol and from the wearing of shorts, from having tattoos or dyeing their hair, quote, unnatural colors, end quote, from having piercings, from listening to non-Christian music, etc., etc., etc. All this is to somehow help them learn about love, Jesus, Christianity, and the Bible better. You'd almost think it was all about correcting and controlling people, just like Jesus did. Sure, not all groups are so controlling and legalistic and rules-focused, but how many people are growing up in those today? How many Bob Jones students, Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, Scientologists, extreme Muslim, Catholic, Orthodox, Jews, Sikh, and fundamentalist Christian children are out there right now? Is it okay to have a book for us? Because we're not supposed to have one. And when we meet them on Facebook, what do we tell them? Go back to your church and apologize for whatever it was you did and try to make things right? Report immediately to a happier church and get singing? When people leave these extreme forms of legalistic groups, the newspapers, magazines, and websites report the event. The following is part of an article about overcoming the odds, which also talks about a woman who had both of her hands cut off with a samurai sword by a crazed boyfriend, and about someone with a crippling anxiety disorder. Here is Craig Hoyle to read the newspaper article about him.
This is Craig Hoyle recording for Mike Moore. When he was kicked out of the Exclusive Brethren at 20, Craig Hoyle didn't know how to change a television channel. He'd never heard of Leonardo DiCaprio, played a video game, or visited an art gallery. University and overseas travel were banned. Life as he knew it was in black and white. All he knew was the church and his work at the family tyre store in Invercargill. Hoyle barely spoke to anyone outside of the Exclusive Brethren. Your whole life is within this very narrow network, and as long as you conform to that, you'll have a good life, he says today, in the sort of urban Auckland cafe he barely knew existed until a few years ago. My family had been in the Exclusive Brethren for 7 generations, so it was all I knew. You're taught from birth that you're in the world, but not of this world. Essentially, they believe they're better than everyone else. The problems began when Hoyle, now 25, started asking questions. During the 2005 election, the Exclusive Brethren ran a $1.2 million leaflet campaign for the National Party. I remember what the church was saying, and the media was different to what I knew was happening, so there were a lot of questions for me. Hoyle began clandestine visits to internet cafes where he quickly discovered all was not as he'd been taught. He googled the church and found screeds of books and articles casting it in a poor light. Meanwhile, he was also grappling with the fact he was gay, a disgrace in the eyes of the church. Despairing, he confessed to church leaders and the next 2 years became a nightmare. He was told he was possessed by demons, sent to purification camps in Australia with the head of the Brethren, Bruce Hales, known to his followers as the elect vessel, and given drugs to suppress his hormones, otherwise known as chemical castration. I had really held out hope talking to Hales because I thought he would wave his arms or put his hands on me and I would be cured, but it didn't work like that, he says. Back in New Zealand, Hoyle realised he wasn't about to change and made contact with Rainbow Youth. The group supported him in leaving the Brethren, and his first new home outside was with a lesbian couple. His family completely disowned him. He remembers the despair he felt when his dad held his 9-year-old sister's arms behind her back to prevent her giving him a hug. I think part of me died inside, he says. By the end of that day, I had no more grief, no more anger, just an empty hole where my emotions had been. He began to build himself a new reality, unravelling each lie. It helped to talk to others who had left the Exclusive Brethren, and it was heartening to find out that while he had been taught the world was a cruel, dark place, that wasn't true. I found it was a caring place, he says, full of people who went out of their way to help me. At first he looked for another religion, but these days describes himself as agnostic. After studying at Auckland University of Technology, he now works as a journalist at a busy metropolitan newsroom and has a partner. I can't think of anything in my life that's not forbidden by the church, he says. I think they would regard me as a completely evil person. For me, it's been such a massive shift in my way of thinking that when I look back at the way I used to be, it's like it's not me. Some habits are hard to break, though, like praying. If I want to think, I meditate, and the easiest way for me to do that is to pray, he says. It's not even that I buy there's a God out there listening, but it's so ingrained I just do it. Even though I would say I've safely transitioned, growing up in the Brethren is something that I think will continue with me for the rest of my life. If I'm in a room with ex-Brethren, we'll quickly lapse back into the old ways of talking. And what happens when my grandmother dies? I've met Brethren who have been out for 50 years and it still infiltrates their lives. Having said that, I have no regrets. I've had amazing opportunities in the last 5 years, more than my family will ever have, and that's really sad.
Some of my Brethren group want to suggest that perhaps the Taylor Hales Brethren are an entirely different, entirely unrelated Brethren group. The sad reality is that they share our roots and got from where we are right now to where they are right now in about 10 years, 1960 to 1970 mainly. And so could we. We are offshoots of each other. All it usually takes is one gimlet-eyed man claiming to be taking the Bible more seriously than anyone else. And in Christian circles, Rob Bell to the contrary, all too often legalism wins every single engagement, and legalists stay and hold power, while decent folk get up and walk out more often than not. Why is this the case? Why wouldn't it be the other way around? One of the unique, to me anyway, things about the Taylor Hales group as compared to my own is their high level of political awareness and involvement. They are repeatedly in the news for messing around in elections and parliament in Australia and New Zealand and England. My TW group never really mentioned or got into politics at all. We weren't supposed to vote or hold public office. We believed in a world that was evil and corrupt, conservatives, liberals, whatevers alike. The world was getting worse every single day, it was never going to get better, and the rapture was really soon. We'd be whisked away, and it would all go utterly to apocalyptic crap. So things like gay marriage, or abortions, or gun control, or the death penalty, though they might well be seen as important, were very much not our concern. The Taylor Hales group, though, is rabidly conservative and gets into legal trouble for using large sums of money to try to swing elections in a conservative direction and for mass-mailing politicians. They are very concerned with protecting their tax-exempt status in various countries, and they are very anti-union.